Hello, I'm Anthony Scaramucci, and this is Open Book, where I talk with some of the brightest minds out there about everything surrounding the written word, from authors and historians to figures in entertainment, neuroscientists, political activists, and of course, Wall Street. Sorry, I can't resist. Before we get into today's episode, if you haven't already, please hit follow or subscribe wherever you get your podcast and leave us a review. We all love a review, even the bad ones. I want to hear the parts you're enjoying or how we can do better. You know, I can roll with the punches, so let me know. Anyways, let's get to it. If we consider the world we live in right now in 2024, what will it look like in 2034? And what about 2054? And we may want to take a breath before thinking about 2084. I'm hoping to be here in 2084, actually. With existential threats, advancements in artificial intelligence, leadership struggles, and our climate catastrophe, there's a lot to come. Admiral James Sarvidis and Elliot Ackerman join me today to share a cautionary tale of what the future could look like. Okay, super excited today. Joining us on Open Book is Admiral James Sarvidis and Elliot Ackerman. Now, Admiral is a retired four-star U.S. Naval officer. He is the former dean of the Fletcher School. Elliot Ackerman is an award-winning author, and he's a Marine veteran. The book today is 2054, but we had a prior book, so this is sort of a part two of 2034, which was a bestseller a few years ago. I read that book, and I wanted to hide in a bunker. I felt like I was reading a presidential daily brief is what I actually really felt like, because, you know, you guys have had access to that. You know how crazy that is. So I want to thank you both for joining. Let's talk first about the new novel. It's a sequel to your previous bestseller. You went to Tufts too, didn't you, Elliot? I believe you did, right?
I did. Yes, that's right.
Yeah. I'm going to leave Tufts out of this right now because, you know, I don't know. They got to get the screws back on the machine there, I think, a little bit. Yeah. Although once a jumbo, always a jumbo. But let's just talk about 2054 for a second. Why did you guys write the second book? Obviously, the first one was a bestseller, so that's probably the reason. But knowing the Admiral as well as I know him, he wants to get this information out into the public domain about what the existential risks are.
Well, it's wonderful to be on the All Jumbo podcast. The idea right from the beginning, Anthony, was to do a trilogy of books. And the first one, obviously, as you mentioned, 2034, about a war with China, big risk. The second novel brings artificial intelligence and civil conflict in America to the mix, but keeps that geopolitical overlay. And then the third novel in the trilogy will be out in a year or so, is 2084, which is about climate and the geopolitical consequences of that. So I would say all along, we were in the mode of thinking trilogy and thinking cautionary fiction. But I'll let Elliot tell the story of how we came together as co-authors. It's a good one.
Yeah, and even though you said we'll keep the tough stuff off the podcast, it's inevitable in telling the story how we met. So Jim had the idea for 2034 and pitched it to, it was by coincidence, our shared editor, Scott Moyers at Penguin Press, who's sort of the third musketeer amongst us. And he said to Jim, well, you know, this sounds great, but, you know, have you thought about working with a novelist on this? And I work with this novelist named Elliot. And Scott didn't know that Jim and I had a previous friendship from our time at Tufts, and that when he was dean of the Fletcher School, he had me there for a semester as writer in residence. So we sort of had this loose kind of conversation that we've been contemporaneously having, just all about books. And so that was sort of how we were matched up, was through this Tufts connection. And so we sat down and just started, you know, one chapter at a time, writing these books and taking on this sort of larger three book project.
Oh, the only reason why I was saying not to bring up Tufts, they're in a little bit of a controversy with everything that's going on right now. And I don't like throwing eggs and tomatoes at them. I just wish them well. We can certainly talk about them. I had a great time when I was there. But here's what I want to ask you, because I don't want to give up too much of the plot line. The book is so good that you guys really wrote that proverbial page turner. You want to get to the next chapter. I almost want to go to the back of the book to see what the hell is going on. But you're like, okay, let me just try to get through this. It's very enjoyable book, but I'm going to ask you some broad questions, if you don't mind, about U.S. existential threats. Okay. The Soviet Union Mr. Starvides, Admiral Starvides, they have hypersonic missiles?
Very much so. And in fact, Anthony, as you probably know, they're using them in Ukraine. And these are missiles that go 5 to 6 times the speed of sound. There's really no classic air defense counter for them at the moment. So that's a very concerning aspect of current geopolitics.
Mr. Ackerman, the United States has how many aircraft carrier strike forces? 11?
Yep, that's okay. Right. Don't ask the Marine about aircraft carriers, but yes.
Okay, but is that the right footprint? Given what you've written about the world we're living in, is that the right footprint? We're going to let the Admiral chime in here as well, but is that the right footprint? For me, if you're going to redesign the American military today, is that what you'd be doing?
I think we are at a moment of real existential change militarily. You know, I also work as a journalist, Anthony, and I just came back from Ukraine, and they are fighting a radically different war there. It's a war that's equal parts 20th century conflict, all's quiet on the Western Front and trenches, but also could equally be Starship Troopers. It is also very high tech. So this merging of high tech and low tech is something that is going on right now across militaries. And it should be forcing us to rethink how we fight and probably rethink how reliant we are on our carrier battle groups.
Admiral, you want to chime in there?
I do. I agree with Elliot. And I'll make a very practical point. The Black Sea Fleet of Russia has now lost almost 40% of its pre-war ships, despite the fact that Ukraine doesn't have a navy. Ukraine has taken them out with cruise missiles, drones, unmanned surface vehicles. So you've got to question the survivability of those huge aircraft carriers. And we have a lot of defenses around them. But if it were my choice to make, I wouldn't be building $10 billion aircraft carriers. I'd probably take that $10 billion, divide it up, make very capable, smaller size ships that can be stealthier and be more survivable than I think current conditions warrant.
Okay, so again, staying on the existential side, we have this conflict in the Ukraine. I'd like you both to chime in on this. In 1994, the Ukrainians gave their nuclear weapons up. President Clinton said, you know, we're going to give you security guarantees, but you got to give your weapons up. They decided to give their weapons up. I think we had something called Operation Porcupine there for a while, where we were supplying them with lots of deterrent-like weapons. What happened, guys? What happened? Did we slow down the arms? What happened to Operation Porcupine? And now make the case to the American people why we need to be supplying them. This is sort of like a lend-lease from the 1940s. Make the case.
I'll take a crack at that. I think the large case of why we need to be supplying them is that this is that's an argument that's been made, but this is a conflict that an aggression in the region that if it goes unchecked would be like a contagion and disrupt Europe in ways that we as Americans will be paying for. Maybe not in 2 years, maybe not in 3 years, but certainly within 5 or 6 years. You know, European stability, European economic stability is the same as American stability. And then briefly, how do we get here? I think, just through a certain degree of complacency. It's been a very, very long time since there's been a land war of this size in Europe. And I think for many Americans, and certainly for many Europeans, it seemed unimaginable up until the very moments and hours before Putin launched his invasion.
Can I just add, and Anthony, you're the macroeconomist here and global investor, but we don't have to imagine what it would be like if we allowed Russia to simply sweep across Ukraine and take it. There would be knock-on effects, and the global economy would suffer significantly. And again, we don't have to imagine it because we saw all this happen in the late 1930s when we failed to stand up to Nazi Germany. We failed to stand up to the Imperial Empire of Japan. We had come home at the end of World War I. We rejected the League of Nations. We erected massive trade barriers. How'd all that work out? Well, you can drop a plumb line to the Second World War, 80 million dead. And the consequences of ignoring a festering problem like this are pretty clear in history.
Okay, so listen, guys, one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on, that's about as articulate of a list of reasons why we have to be in the conflict. And so, not to make this political, but why can't we get that out there more? You know, why can't we get out there that the notion of 5 to 7% of our military expenditure without the loss of American soldiers, servicemen and Marines, et cetera, to put a hurt on a group of people that we know is expansionist. What am I missing? Can somebody chime in? Because obviously I'm a failed political apparatchik. You know, I got to stick to business, but you guys know politics better than me. What am I missing? Why have we not been able to make this case successfully to the American people?
Well, I think sometimes if you look at the history of American politics and particularly American interventions, we and our system of government lends itself to more short-term decision making. You know, we think in 2-year election cycles. I don't say that to be, you know, pejorative. It's how it is. So trying to convince the American people that, hey, we need to do this so that in maybe 5, 6, 7 years, we haven't seen Europe go the way it went in the 1930s, and then we have to cross the Atlantic and intervene. You know, it's sometimes more difficult to connect those dots, and particularly at a time when we're coming off of 20 years of war in the Middle East. So, you know, the American people are smart, and I think they can't connect those dots. And I mean, and the one thing I would add that makes it sort of unique is that I think, you know, national identities are often formed by national antipathies. So there's nothing more American than knowing that the Russians are up to no good. So we get this one in a way we wouldn't maybe if it wasn't Russia invading Ukraine. But still, it's, as we're saying, it's an uphill fight to keep people focused on this conflict outside the 2-year mark.
I would only add to that, and Anthony, you're the master strategic communicator, truly. It's a skill you have.
I asked Donald Trump about that, James. I don't know. I mean, I got fired after 11 days.
That's your badge of honor. But the point is, the White House, the current White House, needs to be pushing this more into the conversation, needs to get more surrogates out talking about it. And the point you made a moment ago, which neither Elliot nor I did, but you're right to bring it up, is how small the cost is here. The Ukrainians are asking for $50 billion. The Europeans have already kicked in $50 billion in the latest round. So we'd be matching the Europeans. It would keep the Ukrainians in the conflict another 2 years. I guarantee you Putin can't survive that. And the bottom line is $50 billion. Yeah, it's a lot of money, okay? Our defense budget is $900 billion. The European collective defense budget, second largest in the world, is $320 billion. So can we find $50 billion, please, to stop this challenge in Europe? I think we can, and I think we need articulate spokesmen to get out and talk about it.
I'm going to test something on both of you.
Okay.
You know, the Joseph Stalin. He was interviewed in the 1930s by Henry Luce. Okay, there was a rise of Nazism going on. This is after Hitler rose to power. And Joe Stalin told Henry Luce in no uncertain terms that he was going to splinter and destroy the United States. And Henry Luce said, well, how are you going to do that? And he said, well, we're masters at manipulation. We're masters at propaganda, disinformation, cleansing pictures. And you guys are a mongrel nation. You're not tied to a bloodline. It's really just an idea. It's nothing more than that. And we're going to get you hating each other. We're going to make it very tribal in your country. And hopefully it'll splinter the country and cause a second civil war. Luce went back, wrote about it. Didn't happen. Our grandparents happened to love the country. They got here as immigrants. Then the war started. It galvanized the country. And there was one piece of weaponry, though, that Joe Stalin didn't have, and that's social media. And so you guys know there are server farms all over Moscow that are pumping out toxic information into the West, France, UK, US. You write a little bit about the AI stuff that goes on in 2054. Is Joe Stalin right? Can he help? Can the Russians? We've got tribal issues without the Russians. Can the Russians and their propaganda, and the Chinese with their propaganda, put a hurt on this beautiful idea known as America?
I worry about it deeply. I do not despair about it. As Elliot said a few minutes ago, the American people, given time, will figure this out. And in terms of social media, the social networks, yes, it is a new lethal weapon. And of course, Putin is taking a direct page out of Stalin. Putin is watching what China is doing to a lesser degree at the moment, but he is seeking to divide us. And I think it will take some hits. We'll feel the pain. As you said, it'll put the hurt on us. But I remain cautiously optimistic. And in the end, 2054 is a cautiously optimistic book because all these technologies from the printing press to electricity to today, artificial intelligence, all of them have potential for both good and evil. I'm going to bet on America. And I always say to my European friends who say, what the hell is going on over there? I say, give us a few more years. Don't bet against us.
Yeah, well, listen, some toxicity that's been created, particularly, you know, on the extremes of these parties. Okay, so I'm not going to indict one party over the other. We'll just say that there's extremes on both sides.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You have a president in this book, 2054, who is ironically named Castro. I love you guys for that because obviously I've been to Havana a few times and we've got this president Castro. We also have a current president that's 81 years old. He's running for re-election and it wouldn't be undiplomatic for me to say that he is probably frailer at 81 than he was at 65. Let's just put it that way. But you have something going on with President Castro, and obviously you can't ignore the coincidence there. So tell us a little bit about President Castro without giving up too much of the plot. What happens to him? And unroll it for us a little bit so we can get people appetite wet for this amazing book.
Sure. When 2054 opens, obviously we're 2 decades after the end of this calamitous war with China, and they've been pretty tumultuous. And so politics in America has changed. And following current trends, what we see is that the Republican and Democratic parties, which now today in America are actually 2 minority parties, the majority of Americans identify with neither party, they've continued to bleed membership. And for their very survival, the extremes of the 2 parties, like you talked about, Anthony, they have to merge and they become what's called Democratic Republicans, which was actually an early party in our country's history, and not without precedence. You know, let's remember the Democratic Party not too long ago was a coalition that included Northeastern liberals and Southern segregationists. So the fringes of the 2 parties merged together. And then you have a very charismatic independent president, Angel Castro, who runs, he wins, and basically gets the country back on its feet after the war. But somewhat problematically, like many leaders, they don't like to let go of power. So Castro, when we meet him, is scheming to extend out past his normal 2 terms in office. This is very, very controversial. And when the book opens, he's giving what will be the first speech in his new campaign, and he drops dead at the dais, apparently from a heart attack. But, you know, we talk about social media and the splintering of American society. Immediately, different narrative lines start emerging as to what happened to Castro.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's one particular piece of technology that gets in the mix, an idea of remote gene editing that could be involved in his mysterious death.
So, Jim, I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing plot. Okay. And I can't wait to read the 3rd book. But Jim, I got to ask you this because I've heard you be interviewed on this. Your peers and your colleagues are saying, you know, wait a minute, Admiral, this is going to happen a lot quicker than 2034 and 2054. What's your reaction to that?
I think there could very well be truth in that. Let's take both cases. 2034, we chose because that's where China will have amassed enough power to significantly militarily challenge the United States. You'll hear people say it's going to come in 3 years or 5 years. I just don't see it that way as I look at those economic trends. And I think over the last 24 months, we've seen the softening and the weakening of the Chinese economy and many of their positions. So it's a matter of debate. I'll stand with my 2034 date. However, 2054, in the 2 years since Elliot and I really wrote the book, now if I had it to do over again, I might very well pull that forward because you see this acceleration in AI unfolding right in front of our eyes. So I'll stand on 2034, 2054. Yeah, a fair number of people have said, I don't know, Jim, it's not going to be mid-century before that scenario starts to unfold. Elliot, you want to add anything to that?
No, I would just say, you know, I think in all of these, and to, you know, we're looking at events that there's some complacency around. You know, it's been a long time since the United States has faced a peer level adversary in a war. It's been a long time since we've had a president pass away in office, you know, whether of natural or unnatural causes, you know, but these are all crises that chances are, you know, we'll live again and see again in our lifetime.
So, Elliot, this question is for you. You know, because I get a lot of writers that are listening to Open Book, and so they want to hear from authors. How do you tackle the research and writing process? And did you always have this kind of a vivid imagination?
I'll start with the first part of that question. You know, I think we talk a lot about what for these books, we talk a lot about the subject matter. And then, you know, you start reading and you read and you learn till where you get to a point that you feel like your knowledge can support the story. And as you're moving through the story, if you feel like you've got gaps, you know, you do a little more research. Or what's great in our partnership is, you know, we bat these drafts around. So as opposed to when I'm writing books on my own, when I'm writing them with the Admiral, I can just sort of put in a section that says, you know, write interesting thing about AI here, and he will fill in the gaps for me. So, so we do that. And I think, yeah, I've always been a reader. I've always loved stories. So I'm very happy with what I do now.
Yeah, the only thing I'll add to that is my best fill-in so far has been when Elliot wrote, "Describe massive war at sea." And then I did.
But Jim, just when I think I'm reading enough, yeah, I think of you and I say, oh man, that son of a bitch, Thor Reedy's is reading more than me. I got to open up another book. Okay. You wrote a great book a few years ago called The Leader's Bookshelf.
Yeah.
What are you reading now, sir? What's on your nightstand?
Yeah, I at this minute, I am just finishing a very thick work about navies at sea. And it's a novel by Mark Halperin. He wrote A Soldier of the Great War. And it's called The Sea and the Stars, pretty evocative title. And it follows a Navy ship through combat in the Arabian Gulf. It's just a beautifully realized novel that also tackles some of the ideas we've talked about new technologies at sea.
So it's called The Sea and the Stars.
Yes, Mark Halperin.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for that. We're getting, unfortunately, to the period of time here where what I do with my authors, and I'd like to get this reaction from both of you. I have a couple of words I spit out, and then my authors react to those words. Okay. So, Elliot, when I say America, you say what?
Don't bet against us.
Okay. What about you, Admiral?
I say the tragedy of democracy is that in the end you elect the government you deserve. It's a quote from de Tocqueville.
Okay.
Let's avoid that tragedy.
I say China. You say what, Elliot?
Pay attention.
Okay.
Biggest challenge we face in this century.
Yeah. Okay. Singularity. This is this is for our young listeners out there. Ray Kurzweil wrote a book about this, saying that we're going to fuse the machinery with the human being. And again, I don't want to give away this plot, but there's some amazing things that you're saying in here, which are not necessarily fiction. They're near nonfiction, meaning they're about to happen here on planet Earth. But I say singularity, Elliot. What do you say?
I say robots will inherit the Earth, but they will be our children.
Okay. Admiral, you're worried?
The singularity is not near. It's here.
Okay. Amen. Well, that's title. That's a good spin because that's the title of Ray's book. I read that book almost 20 years ago now, and I was like, all right, it's not going to happen. Here we are, and it's happening, right? So democracy, sir. Elliot, democracy.
The worst form of government as opposed to all the others.
Yep. Churchillian.
I'm going to echo that. That's what popped into my head. It's a quote from Churchill.
Okay. Conflict. I say conflict. You say what?
Coded into our DNA.
No, well, that's unfortunately true.
Changing every minute in front of our eyes.
Okay. How about these two letters, AI. Now, AI used to mean alternative investments for somebody like me, but AI now means artificial intelligence. Elliot, what do you say?
Coming fast and faster every single day.
The world is unprepared for the arrival of AI.
Okay. Climate.
I think the third challenge in our series.
Climate is the ultimate problem that we can only solve together.
Right. No, listen, I'm with you, and you're a seafaring person, so you can see it from all over the world, the impact that it has. Okay, these are the last three, then I'll let you fine gentlemen go. 2024, Elliot.
Going to be quite the year.
Yeah. See, I like fighting, so it's going to be a great year for me. I mean, it's going to be a lot of fun for me. What about you, Admiral?
Stay out of Washington, D.C.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't go. I mean, listen, I could only last 11 days there. I get highs when I enter the beltway. You have to worry about that. But I think we have to have a say in this fight. 2034, Elliot.
Like also going to be quite a year. I think the world will be radically different by 2034.
2034 is the point at which China potentially has the military capability to go toe-to-toe with the United States.
Okay. So if I make it, I'm not saying I'm going to, but who knows? If I make it the 2054, I'll be 90. So let's say 2054, Elliot, what's going to happen in my 90th year if I'm lucky enough to make it?
The world will start feeling a lot more like science fiction.
Okay. Admiral?
2054, I will be there to see it personally.
Okay, so the singularity's here, and you
we'll get you there.
You believe we can get there because of what's happening from a biotechnology perspective, from a genome perspective. You believe that we can get there.
I do, and I also believe that by 2054, I'll have a full head of hair like Anthony Scaramucci.
Well, I want your hair to be thicker than mine, okay? This is, I'm starting to lose it on the top here. My son told me, Dad, you don't have a forehead, you don't have a five head, you now have a 10 head. Is that a nice thing to say to your dad? Very, very hurtful. Guys, it's phenomenal to talk to both of you. The title of the book is a very simple title. It's 2054, but I'm going to recommend to viewers and listeners, please buy 2034 because they go well together, and you won't stop reading till you get to the end of both of them. Admiral Starvides, thank you. Elliot Ackerman, thank you for joining us today on Open Book.
Thanks so much, Anthony.
Thanks so much, Anthony. It's great to see you.
I'm Anthony Scaramucci, and this is Open Book. For more about me, my childhood, early career, SkyBridge, Bitcoin, and yes, the White House, my new book, From Wall Street to the White House and Back, is available for pre-order on Amazon and wherever you buy your books. Boy, there's a lot to unpack with today's show. Admiral Starvides and Elliot Ackerman, brilliant guys, creative, imaginative thinkers. You feel like you're reading the near future in their books. So it's not quite science fiction, but it's close. And we're looking out at the next 10 to 30 years and thinking, my God, so many things are going to be happening. The singularity, further improvements in AI, exponential opportunity in biotech and cloning and all these cool things. At the same time, though, as Mr. Ackerman pointed out, we are wired for conflict. And so how do we keep ourselves from killing each other so that we can continue these wonderful out-of-worldly advancements? I think that the books 2034 and 2054 should be read by everybody. They are cautionary tales about what the future could look like. They're fiction, but they're also frightening. My bet is some of it will come to pass, but with good leadership and better policies and better decision-making, hopefully we'll keep the good stuff and leave out the bad.
Hello?
All right, you want to come on the show?
I just got home, yep.
All right, you ready?
Go ahead.
That's good timing, Ma. See, I knew you. All right. It's okay. My guest this week was an admiral, a four-star admiral, and an author that wrote a book about the future. And they're saying that the world is going to change again in 2034 and change again in 2054. So let's go back, Ma. 1974 is 50 years ago, right? Today's 2024. Did you think that the world would be what it is today 50 years ago?
Absolutely not.
Okay, so what's different?
I think what's different? Well, I thought we had some very good presidents in between that. And I even thought Clinton was good, even though he got caught in doing what he did. And he got caught, and I'm sure a lot of them did that.
I think
Reagan was good. And you know, there were good presidents along the way. Not everyone, but some of them were very, very good. Eisenhower, to me, was very good. I met him personally when I was a kid because our class met him. And I thought he was very good. I think General Kelly and you would be good.
Yeah, you like General Kelly, though, no?
Yeah, I do. I think he's very frank, and he's intelligent, and he was very good in our country, and I think he knows what it's all. I don't think Trump knows what it's all about. When you really undress him, I don't think he sees really what we have. Like the Chinese would like to be number one, and the Americans be number two, and I think he will fight that. I do. I've been following that. I think that's one thing he'll fight for, is that he won't let them take over us. But I don't like when he shook Putin's hand, because I think Putin is a terrible human being. And I don't know why he would even touch his hand. I would skeeve it, as the Italians would say.
Right. All right. So, who's going to win, Ma?
I think Trump's going to win.
So you think Trump's going to win. All right. It's early. We'll have to see what happens. That's why I love talking to you. Okay. And where do you think the world's going to be in 2054? That's 30 years from now, Ma.
I think we're going to get it back together, because I believe in my heart that someday, and after this election, you will run in the next one. I won't be alive to see it, but maybe from the other world, I'll see it.
Mom,
I think eventually you will run, and you will put this country back to where it should be.
Okay.
In fact, if you ran and became president, and I'm not saying this to blow smoke, you were president, and Trump was vice president, and he would be okay.
Ma, you are such an Italian mother, okay? I love everything about you, Ma, but that is so gugoots, okay? And for people listening,
it's not gugoots.
It is gugoots, okay? But it's fun to listen to you, Ma. What else do you want to say, Ma? Anything else on your mind?
That I love my sons.
Oh, okay.
And my daughter, and I love my children.
Okay.
And I think that they can do no wrong.
All right. All right, Ma. Thank you for joining Open Book. Okay. I love you, Ma. All right. I'll call you later. I am Anthony Scaramucci, and that was Open Book. Thank you for listening. If you like what you hear, tell your friends and make sure you hit follow or subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast. While you're there, please leave us a rating or review. If you want to connect with me or chat more about the discussions, it's at Scaramucci on Twitter or Instagram. I'd love to hear from you. I'll see you back here next week.